time for a Sales Manager Spotlight, brought to you by Death Wish Coffee, the world's strongest coffee. And we're going to be talking to some of the world's strongest and smartest sales managers.
What they like, what they fear, how they hire. Doesn't matter if you're a manager, doesn't matter if you're a salesperson, it doesn't even matter if you're just a person. You're going to learn something from these top leaders from around the country.
And with that, it's time to get this week's Sales Manager Spotlight. Let's go to the boss's office. I promise, this time, it won't be scary.
On the line now is Dominic DiGiuseppe. He is the Vice President of Sales for Experian Automotive in Schaumburg, Illinois. They are an automotive data provider, providing multiple data sources from credit, vehicle, and marketing databases that allow for a level of unmatched intelligence. You can learn more about Dominic's company at www.experian.com.
Talk to our listeners. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Yeah.
Sure. So I am Dominic DiGiuseppe. I'm the Vice President of Sales for Experian Automotive. We support all of the largest dealers that are out there, your AutoNations, your CarMaxes. We provide them with data and analytics to make good decisions. The way that we look at it is we want to be the source of truth in the industry. So Experian, big data company. We've got a lot of technology that we work with our dealers with that help them make educated decisions and run their business.
Educated decisions about credit?
About a number of things. So about what opportunity exists in their marketing area, what credit is available to consumers that are walking in that are trying to finance vehicles or purchase vehicles through them and set up financing through the network of lenders that they work with. So there's a myriad of things that I don't know if you want me to go into the long-winded spiel, but it, you know, in terms of data in Experian, we're very unique in that there's only one of two companies that has access to registration data, one of three companies that has access to credit data, and then all of the consumer psychographic and demographic insights we have. We're really one of one.
And then you That's can enter great. A VIN number and find out what's happened to the car.
You could do that. You can find out where the vehicle's at. You can find, you know, if you wanted to, you know, my first car was a 1960 Impala. So if I wanted to go.
Well, that's pretty cool.
It was cool. It was a big car, but it was, but if I wanted to find where that vehicle is today, most likely it's been crushed. It's in the scrapper.
Oh no.
That's my assessment. I don't know. Maybe it's alive and kicking today. I have no idea.
But you don't want to put the VIN number in to find out, right? You don't want to know the honest truth about it.
The problem is I wasn't the best at record keeping back then. So
gotcha.
For me to find, you know,
You have a 30-person team. Talk to us about what you look for when you're hiring.
Yeah. So what we look for when we're hiring is really the, you know, attitude and aptitude. I think for myself, it's just, you know, keeping it basic from a salesperson perspective. So, you know, having the attitude to want to learn, want to grind, having the aptitude to be able to learn and be able to apply skills. And then something that we did a couple of years ago, which has helped us tremendously, is we partnered with a company called Chemistry. And what they do is they really help us look at a, you know, personality profile and understand just what I mentioned. Does that person have the right attitude, and do they fit the culture of the organization, and do they have the aptitude? And, you know, by bringing them on and bringing them through the sales process and the training that we have in place, can they apply those skills and be effective?
Hmm. And has it worked out in terms of retention?
Yeah. So in terms of retention, so we've had, you know, I think this year we went through a change, you know, transition with our sales force, but from a transition standpoint or a retention standpoint, we've got folks that have been with us for 10, 12, 15 years that we have a long tenure. We have Experian Automotive in general has a very low voluntary attrition rate.
Gotcha.
So involuntary though,
there's some of that, right?
Say that again.
Involuntary. There's some of that as well.
You know, just with any sales.
Like you weren't planning on leaving, but we are planning on you leaving.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a fair way to look at it. I mean, obviously, you know, with the wanting to have a high performing sales culture, you know, there's going to be some of that, but, you know, obviously we want to do whatever we possibly can to make sure that those folks get skills and we can work together to make sure they're productive.
Have you ever determined what it costs you to lose a salesperson, dollars and cents?
Yeah, I know we've looked at that before, because it is, you know, for folks that if you bring on good people and you can't retain them, that's mm-hmm. going to put going to put you in a bad way. Yeah. That's that you want to be cycling through. Yeah. You know,
I don't want to get into it too personally because those are numbers that are none of our business, but I can tell you that number one, it appears on no balance sheet.
Yeah.
And number two, most people don't understand the part of pipeline and relationship that's lost, not just cost.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because when folks leave, I mean, they not only that, but I think I've had a lot of great leaders I've worked for that have instilled culture is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have great people that leave, a part of the culture leaves with them. Mm-hmm. And you can't.
Yeah. Culture and history if they've been there a long time.
Correct. Yeah. Especially, I think that's something that's very important for our organization is that, we've had a lot of folks that have been with the organization for a long time that know how things work and how to keep the gears oiled. And you got to keep that. It's important not only to keep that, but to grow those people and make sure that they continue to be a pivotal part of the organization and the growth.
So you've mentioned culture a few times now. What kind of culture have you created?
Yeah, I think, I can't take responsibility for it. I think that the people that we've brought in certainly have created a culture of fun and of winning. And I think those are things that are important. Obviously they work hand in hand. If you're winning, you're having fun, but the people that we bring on board, that I like to bring on board are, obviously I think, again, going back to very basics, hire people that are smarter than you, that, have a great attitude. And, I think the old saying goes, culture trumps strategy for breakfast, eat strategy for breakfast. So if we've got great people in the organization, folks that are self-starters, that are thinking for themselves, that see a problem, they go fix it, but want to come to work on a daily basis, and not only help themselves get better, but help others around them get better. That's when you start to see, you start to really realize the gains of change. And that's what's exciting about where we're at right now.
Mm-hmm. Besides your personality test that you do, how do you personally assess for attitude?
How do I assess for attitude? I think a lot of it is, when you're assessing for attitude, especially when you have an hour to interview somebody, it's much more difficult to assess for those types of things because it's only a conversation and you're hoping that you can draw something out of that conversation. I think a lot of it really comes from, if you're looking at someone's body language, I think you can tell a lot about how they are interacting with you. I mean, it's a social situation. So if you're meeting somebody for the first time or a new client, body language tells you a lot about them and what they're thinking. And I think it's a lot about when you're sitting down with somebody and you're sitting across from somebody and you're looking to see if they would be a good fit for the organization outside of the skills assessment that we talked about. Body language is going to tell you a lot about them. And are they making eye contact? Are they engaged? Are they looking at you? So I think that's really going to be an indicator as to,
I'll give you an idea if you're open for it.
Absolutely.
Ask the person to tell you about their last boss. And that way you hear their attitude reflected in their language.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
And if they throw the guy under the bus and say he was a piece of shit, I guarantee you they're going to say the same thing about you.
Fair enough.
Just look for the language that they have and the attitude that's contained in their language. You can also ask them to tell you about their worst customer experience or their best customer experience, and that will also give you a reflection of the way they think.
Yeah.
Your attitude comes from the way people dedicate themselves to the way they think. You might also ask, which is a pretty embarrassing question, tell me about the last book you read on attitude.
Yep.
And most people will say, I never read one.
Well, they should pick up your gold book.
Yeah, you could have a stash of my gold book of Yes Attitude in your drawer, and you can say, well, here's an autographed copy of one from Jeffrey Gittimer. Read it.
What if you have it?
Huh?
What if I already have it?
I'm telling you to give it away to other people. You can buy like a stash of it. and I'm pretty sure you already have it.
Yeah.
But think about the value of what it would be if somebody actually read it. I got an email last night from a customer of ours. You may know him. It's General Motors. And the guy who's the district, they have these, I'm in the aftermarket.
Yeah.
And the big big manager, I sent him a copy of the new edition of the Yes Attitude book, and he literally wrote me a four-paragraph email last night at 1 o'clock in the morning thanking me for the book that he couldn't put it down. And, you know, it was it was absolutely unbelievable. So it has impact on people, and when you are sitting in front of somebody, basically what you're doing is, you know, putting them on trial. And you're asking them a bunch of questions, and they're having to respond in a way. Probably half of them are sweating their brains out because they want the job.
Right.
And think about what a nice gesture it would be if you gave them a book. And not just my book. You could go to the Norman Vincent Peale book, you know, The Power of Positive Thinking. Just go to a used bookstore. You can probably pick one up for $10. And just say, if you've never read one, here's one that has impacted me.
It's a good idea.
And they'll go, oh, it's a smart guy. Because you are a smart guy, by the way. You interview very well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'll take any compliment I can get. I really will.
All right. Well, then... why don't, when I come to Chicago next, we can meet at Gibson's.
Sounds good to me.
And hang out. Or actually, based on your name, I think we would probably rather meet at
Gene and Georgette's.
Right.
Yeah, most people can't. I can't even say my name half the time.
Well, you know what, though? It's like double Italian.
Yeah, it's D. Giuseppe.
The D in front of it, yeah, makes it like uber Italian.
Oh, man.
Do you eat at Gene and Georgette's?
I've been there once.
No.
Oh, it's so good.
Wait a second. Those Southside people, they have no idea where to even eat. Are you from the South Side as well, or are you from the West Side?
I mean, I'm from the South Side. I'm on the outskirts of the South Side. I grew up in Melrose Park.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So I wasn't like in the city, but on the
outskirts. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll forgive you for the White Sox thing, because the only reason I'll forgive you is in their buffet, when you go and you sit in the good seats for a White Sox game, they have the best food I've ever had at a ballpark.
They do. They absolutely do. I was fortunate enough to be there, sit there a couple of times, and I think this last time, I brought my kids with me.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'm telling you, I think they probably thought about kicking us out a couple of times.
Yeah, of course.
They took advantage.
The reason it's so good is because it's a Levy. Catered place, and Levy's in Chicago. So it's like their show place.
Yeah. They do some great stuff. And they bring the players about, and, you know, they do a great job with
interesting.
That.
At the Cubs, they only will give you a hot dog at the White Sox game. You can have all the food.
And
the
old style.
Exactly.
The old style.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the other thing that I wanted to ask you is, do your guys make a first impression when they come up to a dealership? Because I had an idea that they should drive it like a cool car. You know, you're in the car business, and these guys are driving up in a Mazda or something, and it's not really going to make any kind of impression. But if they had like a sports car or some kind of a cool thing that they drove
all of
in.
His sales reps now officially love you, Jeffrey.
Oh. No, well, they can buy their own damn car. I'm not saying that. But they should have something that creates conversation.
So we're a partner with Mazda. And Mazda 6 is very cool cars.
Yeah.
And all of my people have Mazda 6s.
Oh, they do?
So they have those. I mean, going back to the interview stuff, I mean, that's, you know, one of the questions I do like to ask is, what is your favorite car?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Because
it'll tell you something about if they're going to fit in the culture, if they're a car person. I mean, you got, even if you're not a car person, you got to know a little bit about cars to have a passion and grind and do what we do on a daily basis. I mean, we do just what everybody else does. But I think with the, you know, flair and the folks that we work with, a lot of these folks have grown up around cars, selling cars, knowing cars. You got to have a little something. So if you can at least tell me that your favorite car is a BMW, you know, M3, hey, more power to you.
What about Tesla? Suppose their favorite car is a Tesla.
Teslas are great.
What's your favorite car?
Yeah.
Man. So you got to give me a budget.
Okay, $50,000. And what are you driving right now?
I've got right now. I'm driving a Hemi Charger.
Oh,
so
that's a Dodge car, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Mopar. Yeah, it's been the first Mopar that I've had.
Really?
So, yep. I'm usually a Chevy guy, Chevy and Ford.
Okay.
What I grew up around.
That's so interesting, and it's like, but I mean, it's an egalitarian car. You know, you're sort of in the mainstream with that car. What do your kids want?
Oh, man. Well, right now, my oldest wants Miami Charger. He's not going to get it. But the it's a cool car.
I hope he's listening. It's on the record now.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think my oldest wants a Porsche.
Okay.
Because, you know, of course, that's what he can afford right now. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's going to get a Honda Civic.
if he's lucky.
Yeah. Or he wants like an Audi R8, anything that's poster worthy that he can put up on his wall. That's what he.
Oh,
what
I
he
see. Wants. That's cool. That's totally cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you get him like a little Jeep? Those RX things aren't they're kids.
The Lexus RX?
The
RX?
No, the Toyota one.
Oh.
The RX4
like,
or something.
Like a Wrangler?
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, those are cool. I always wanted one of those too.
Those are cool.
My dad didn't want to get me one because he wouldn't let me get one because he thought I was going to roll it over. But that's
a surprise.
Yeah, it was shocking, right?
Don't all parents think that? Don't you think your kid's going to roll it over?
No, I have complete faith in my yeah, of course, yes.
Okay, so were you always in the car industry, or where did you get your sales start?
No, I've always been a, you know, kind of a, all my friends and I growing up, we were all gearheads. We all had, you know, antique vehicles and classic vehicles that we liked to tool on and restore. And my dad, you know, I grew up around my father always having something that we were working on and doing stuff. So
cool.
So, I mean, I grew up around it, but it wasn't until about 6 years ago that I became a quote unquote car guy. So even being in the car business now for 6 years, I'm still a noob. I'm still a rookie. I think there's a lot to really learn about that. But I got my sales start, really, I guess going back, I ran my own business. I played baseball for a long time. A buddy of mine and I, we started our own business, teaching lessons, you know, for kids over the summer while we were in college. Didn't know it at the time, but I was in sales.
And while yeah, exactly.
When I was in college, my degree was in post-production, like video editing. And I'm really putting that to good use now.
Oh yeah, sure.
But when we were doing that, you know, I started my one of my friends coming out of school worked for, you know, started working for a company at the time, you know, called Experian. And I had no idea what credit was. I just knew that I had signed up a bunch of, you know, credit card slips that I had apparently unlimited money I didn't have to pay back when I was in college. learned that the wrong way.
Yeah.
And but working for Experian, I came in into an inside sales team that was team compensated. We all shared accounts. You know, really it was a feeder pool, but we sold across a number of different industries. We sold to collection agencies, mortgage companies, auto dealerships. So it was a great opportunity to kind of cut my teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some great leaders I worked for that, you know, moved me through the business and then got to go, you know, experience field sales, which I've always thought that, hey, field sales is way easier compared to inside sales, because if you can do it over the phone and you can create and you can keep people engaged, I was so happy to be able to move outside because I'm like, wow, now I can sit across from somebody and see what they're thinking, see their body language, kind of understand, you know, what's going on. And then move on. So I've been with Experian for about 16 years. You know.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I really started my sales career with Experian. I left for a brief time because everybody's naive at a certain point in their career and they'll accept anybody back. So I got a chance to come back, and I've been now in the automotive division for the last 6 years. So that was really when I started to get an education in dealing.
And go back to your first sales manager guy. What was some of the advice that you got that really stuck?
So my first sales manager was great. He was very operationally driven, which helped me because I think from when you look at like a DISC profile, I'm high, I'm off the charts I, and I tend to get, you know, I'm kind of off in the cloud sometimes, kind of thinking like big ideas and stuff. So he gave me a plan, and his motto was always, you know, plan your work and work your plan.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped me focus on making sure that every day you come in and you have an agenda for yourself and you get yourself set up and you have a plan. Even you're not going to accomplish 100 things in that day, but what are the 5 most critical things that you need to get accomplished? So when you're off doing all that other stuff, you know, and thinking about big ideas and doing all these other things and ideating or whatever, at least you've gotten a number of things accomplished. So I think because the little things add up to the big things at the end of the year.
Do you measure your accomplishments as well?
I'm really, that's something I'm bad at. I don't do that well. I don't celebrate success well. I think that's one thing. And thank goodness I have, some leaders on my team that do that. But I don't do a good enough job reflecting and really understanding kind of what were the elements of success. How do we repeat that? How we celebrate that? I think we, it's something that I need to do a little bit more of.
Do you know, when I was a kid selling in my 20s, we had $2,500 deals that we were selling, and I would have like 3 appointments a day. If I made the sale, I would go buy myself something. And if I lost the sale, I would go buy myself something. And that way, my mental attitude towards winning and losing was equal. I didn't get pissed off about anything. And it made me a better salesperson.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
So learn how to celebrate, Dominic. This is, I'm going to fire you if you don't celebrate better.
Did you move directly into leadership, or did you get leadership training?
So yeah, great question. So I think when I moved directly from, so I got both really. I moved directly from the field into leadership. I moved back into the inside sales part of the company that I started with into leadership. And when I did that, we were put through leadership training, basic skills and some of those things. And I had a number of books that were handed to me on leadership. And
like what? Really, what was the best one?
Oh my goodness. The best leadership book that I think it's going to sound funny, but I think that, and it was posed to me as a leadership book at the time, but really, the Carnegie, Make Friends and Influence People was the way it was provided to me was this is basic skill selling. I can work a little blue here, but I mean, basically what was told to me was when you come into leadership, you still need to be genuine. Don't be a dick. Mm-hmm. Right. You can't, because you can't, very well said. Yeah, you can't change, who you are, what got you here, because if you do, you got to build and you got to evolve, but you can't just change your demeanor and your personality. So that I think was some of the most important skills that were provided to me. And I mean, obviously, Carnegie's book, I mean, it's just making friends.
If you don't have my leadership book, we'll send you a copy today, an autographed copy.
I do not have your leadership book. I've got the Little Red Book of Selling.
Okay,
which is,
cool.
Which is, but yeah.
All right, you're on for that.
Awesome.
You get a guy, and he's a new person. Do you permit them to ride along with existing people?
Yeah. Not only do we permit it. I kind of mandate it, because I think it's important. So the culture that I grew up in selling was none of us are as smart as the rest of us. So we all had different skill sets, and we were all trying to, learn on a go forward basis. So we all sat with each other during the course of the day. Mm-hmm. And I still apply that. I'm still trying to, I still try to ride along with other leaders on the sales team so I can learn how they're doing things. And because you're going to pick up different skill sets. You're not going to do it all.
I only fear that when you have a new guy and you train him for a week or two or sometimes even a month, and then you say, I want you to ride with Bill.
Yep.
Because he's been with us for 10 years and he knows the ropes. And Bill drinks a lot, and he is kicks his dog when he goes home. And he's thinking about leaving, and he's not really as palsy with you as you think he is.
Sure.
And the kid gets in the car with Bill, and Bill says, let me tell you how things really work around here.
Yep.
And at that point, he's retraining your guy.
Mm. Yep.
So I'm always very careful about how I recommend ride-alongs. And I think that the leader should be the ride-alonger rather than the sales rep should be the ride-alonger. Just my opinion. And the other question that I have is, when you ask somebody to ride along, do you pay them extra?
No.
Think about it.
So you're advocating for the person that we're having ride along, the new person?
No.
Person taking them out.
The person taking them.
The person driving the car.
Yeah, here's $100. Take care of Bobby here.
Okay.
And, make sure that he has an agenda, not just a ride along, but an agenda that says, I'm going to show them how I introduce, I'm going to show them how I make friends, I'm going to show them how I widen the relationship by seeing other people in the dealership. Mm-hmm. I'm going to show him or her how I will take their glass of water when they offer it to me. I'm going to show them how I close deals or look for more business. And that way you've given the guy an agenda and $100.
It's a good idea.
And he's not being put upon.
Right.
You know, why am I having to drag this kid around? He's a jerk. And I don't like his hair. And he's a Cubs fan.
Oh, man.
But think about it. As a manager, you have the authority to force people to do it. But you also have the authority to make people unbelievably happy to do it.
Right. It's a very good point.
Cool.
And you don't have to take it out of your pocket. You could probably expense it, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
No, it's a good point. Make sure, it's a positive experience for both of them.
Yeah, and I don't know whether you're allowed to get petty cash or not, because big companies sometimes don't do that, but a $100 bill goes a longer way than a $100 check.
Yeah. Yep. Mostly because of tax.
Yeah, exactly.
So talk to us about your leadership philosophy.
Yeah.
Sure. So yeah, my leadership philosophy is pretty simple. It's, you know, I think, you know, I mentioned before, you know, the don't be a dick, but I think, you know, I'm always looking for folks to break things and challenge status quo and be humble. Right. So I want to make sure that what I mean by break things, and it's kind of gotten into my team now, that I'm always, you know, saying break things. It's like, if we're not moving forward, we're moving backward. I think my leadership philosophy and style was, you know, I played baseball for a long time. I had the good fortune to play alongside some guys that were really, really good. I wasn't one of those guys. I had to be a first in, first out kind of guy, and first in, last out type of guy. And I had to grind. But, you know, to be able to share a field and be on the same team as guys that were really good, you could see what they had to do on a daily basis to get themselves ready. And being able to, from a leadership standpoint, you know, be with high performing individuals. And if you want to be part of a great sales team, you have to understand and kind of be under, you know what's going to make them tick and be understanding of, they're all going to have certain nuance, but you have to challenge them. We have to be moving forward. You have to break things, because if we're accepting of status quo, we're never going to get better. And that goes for every individual, that goes for every leader, that goes for all the operational areas within the business. So it's one of those things from, if we're not moving forward, we're moving backward. So, and I think we have to, no matter how much success that we have, you have to stay humble, because if you don't stay humble, you lose the sense of what got you there. I grew up in a very blue collar neighborhood. So I always reflect on what's been able to get me. I've been very fortunate to, as I've had. But those are the things that really drive my leadership philosophy, is like, you know, keep moving forward, challenge, and be humble.
If you're a sales leader and you just heard this segment and you're thinking, man, I really should get that Gittimer Learning Academy, stop. You need to get the Learning Academy for your entire team so they can get better. And you can track, measure, and monitor everybody on your team after they've taken the assessment and learn about how good they are and or where they need help. And you as their leader can now actually coach them to victory.
If you're a strong, smart, successful sales manager and you want to be featured in our Sales Manager Spotlight series on Sell or Die, all you need to do is email sellordie@gittimer.com. If you know someone or you have a favorite sales manager who's amazing and should be featured, nominate them at sellordie@gittimer.com. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off. Sell or diehards, attention. If you love the show, make sure you have subscribed to the show.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes and give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend, tell both your friends about the best sales podcast on the planet.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true seller diehard, and we thank you.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.